to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating the West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now, here's your host, Wayne Bennett. What you were doing to me just ain't right to make me feel
so bad. Welcome to Wayne Bennett's Podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Bennett. And this is episode 135. We're taping this on April the 5th, 2024. And our guest today is no stranger to the podcast. He's been on here more times than anyone else besides me. Mr. Bernard Bostic, welcome.
How you doing today, Wayne?
Great. And, you know, we've been walking together about 25 years. I think it'll be in September, and we solved a lot of world problems while we're walking and talking. And you know, sometimes you think you know a guy or a person, and you don't. Tell everybody a little bit about your mom and dad.
Well, my mom and dad went to Woodrow Wilson High School. My dad graduated in 49, and my mom graduated in 52, and they both were just general workers. My dad had several jobs. He worked in an ice cream plant down there at Mabscott. He worked putting up signs for a Mr. Miller, and he coached Little League Baseball. And one of the first teams that was ever down there, he coached in the early 50s. I was born in 56. Then he decided one day that he wanted to go to college, and he knew some people. And these people were prominent in Beckley. They supported him in his endeavor, and they got him into Morse Harvey, and they got loans for him. And he went on to teach 1 year at Clear Fork. And after that, he came back, saw a job posting at Beckley College in a newspaper, went up, applied for it, and taught there from, I want to say, 63 to about 95.
Wow. Yeah, I had him for biology at Beckley College, and he was an excellent teacher. Biology was not exactly one of my favorite subjects, but when I got with him, he made things pretty clear. And your mom was an educator also, wasn't she?
My mom went about it in a different way, and probably was more proud of what she did. I'm proud of both of them, but my mom stayed at home for a while. And then she went to work at Beckley Manufacturing. Now, this is in the old John I. building. And she worked there for several years. And my dad was working there at the time, too, before he started going to college full time. And she ended up being a supervisor on the floor. And this is a lady that had nothing but a high school education. And then she kind of felt like she wanted to do more. At that time, the transistor business was going out of style. That's what they made at Beckley Manufacturing. And she decided she wanted to be a teacher. And so she started going to school at night at Beckley College, eventually got 2 years of classes in, about 70-some hours. And then she drove every day to Bluefield State.
Wow.
And she liked English. And the reason she liked English is because there was a guy you've had on your podcast, Jerry Rose, that taught English. And she just fell in love with the subject and ended up graduating from college in 1974, the same year that I graduated from high school. And she taught a year, I want to say, at the South Fayette Street School, which at that time was special education. And then she taught a year at Lester. And then she taught 23, 25 years at Shady Junior High.
Now, your brother James is also an educator, and so it's kind of a family business. You actually went to Woodrow when I was teaching at Woodrow. You graduated in 74. You could have had me for class.
I didn't take any hard classes. They had me in all the easy classes.
You're probably fortunate, but you were active in the band and Boy Scouts. Now, you were actually an Eagle Scout, weren't you?
We, Harry Shoemate, C.R. Allen, a couple of my buddies down around Temple Street and Sheridan Avenue, just decided to join the Boy Scouts. C.R. had been in the Scouts for a little while, and my cousin, I want to say David Miller, was in it. He was Troop 6, First Baptist Church, and it was just something that I just fell in love with. And it was And, you know, not everybody can be a Boy Scout. You know, it's just different, but it just appealed to me. And I just went crazy. Never missed a meeting, went to the camps, got all kinds of merit badges. At that time, I became an Eagle Scout. And it was also, I shared the Scout of the Year with a guy by the name of Tim Bellamy, who was in there with me in 1972. And it, to this day, I mean, you learn how to be a leader. You learn how to make decisions that affect not only you, but other members in the troop. And it was just really good. And I met a lot of friends that to this day, I still see and talk to. And it was, there was also something called the Order of the Arrow, which was kind of another level of Boy Scouts. And I was in that, and it was just really good. And now I have a nephew that is kind of was casting around looking for something to occupy him. And he's in seventh grade. And we talked him into going into the Boy Scouts, and we've already been to several meetings, and I'm helping with Troop 3 at Faith Community Church now. So after 50-some years, I'm Scout again.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I was in the Scouts for about a year, year and a half, but I didn't get off till I was a little older, and then sports and jobs got involved, and I didn't get to stay in there, even though I really liked it. But one thing I remember, the Scout law: trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, right, clean, and reverend. Now, I can't remember what I had for breakfast, but I've never forgotten the Scout law. It's always stuck with me. And if you could live by the Scout law, you would be a perfect person almost.
Yeah, I mean, there's about 12 or 13 of those. There's only 10 commandments.
Yeah. So you're involved with Scouts at Faith Community, and you're a member of Faith Community Church, aren't you?
Yes, we've been there we joined right before the pandemic. We had come there on Mother's Day, I believe, and maybe even sooner. It was just a great church. I mean, I can't recommend it enough. If anybody's looking for a church, they're friendly. There's a lot of youth activities. There's a lot of senior activities. We have something called small groups, where a small group of people that meet in a house of somebody, and we all bring food. I mean, that's part of church, is eating. And, you know, we'll have a book that we study for about 6 to 9 weeks, about a 9 week period most of the time, maybe a little longer. And, you know, they have like 20 some classes or small groups to choose from. That's where you really get into really the Bible, and where you start to meet friends and make new friends. And it's grown by leaps and bounds. You know, there's two services on Sunday. They just opened up a service on Saturday night because they couldn't fit enough people in on Sunday. And so it's just nice. I mean, and you walk in and you feel at home, and somebody always talks to you, and it's just great.
It's a little something for everybody. You know, it's great for young families. They offer senior activities. I mean, it's just a little something for everyone, I think. But now, along with your teaching, how long did you teach? You taught a long time.
I'm still teaching. In December, at the end of December, I had taught 45 years. So I'm over 45 now.
Wow.
And I retired 2 years ago, but I've just continued to teach. I had about a week off when my mom passed away. And other than that, I've taught every day, roughly for 45 years, over 45 years.
Now, you're involved with Homebound and virtual.
We teach kids. A virtual school, and that's Homebound, and also Alternative Kids. It's kids with health problems, kids that just get tired of the drama of public schools. And they come in. They have to be approved. They come in. We have classes 4 days a week, 2 days for high school, 2 days for middle school. And the times that they're not in class, then they have work they're expected to do. It's all online. We're the only ones that offer a live class. Any other online schools that you go to, and there's several out there. This one's free. But the rest of them not only charge you, but they just put stuff online and you're expected to do the work and turn it in.
Yeah.
And you never, you can't get in contact with teachers. Last year was my first year doing it. We had some experience because of COVID and we did online teaching then. And this isn't bad, but even it's even better this year. We're getting some really good kids in the middle schools and high schools that they're smart. It's just like being in a classroom, other than the fact that, you know, they're at home and I'm in the basement of the Board of Education. They participate, they do really well. And then when you get to high school, you have kids that they're working. You know, they have, and it's sad to say this, but there are kids that they've got families they have to support due to incapacitated mothers and fathers, or they've got a child that they have to stay and take care of. We have that several times. And what we do is at the beginning of every 9 weeks, we'll set out everything we want done. So they can come in, and if they work, they just check my class, and they do the work and they turn it in. We record every class. So the people that miss the class, they can go back and go to my website and click on January 31st, and there's my lesson. And they can listen to it. And then if they have any questions, they can contact us live. They can just call us up on the phone and we'll answer them. Or they can set up a tutoring time in the afternoons on Tuesdays and Thursdays and on Fridays. And it's like a live class, and there might be one or two people show up, or there might be that one person. And sometimes you can help them, and it takes 5 minutes, and sometimes, you know, it takes 30 minutes. But it seems to be going really well. We have right at 250 kids in that now.
Just in Raleigh County.
Just in Raleigh County. And that's a small grade school.
Yeah.
There are grade schools in other counties that don't reach near that amount.
Now you, along with your education experience, you've been a coach for many years also. You've been a girls and boys basketball coach. You've been a football coach, cross country, track, tennis. But you're more noted for the basketball and tennis, I guess.
Yeah. There's two stories about how I got into coaching. The first one, I was in the seventh grade. And we had homeroom tournaments. And homeroom tournaments at Stratton, up until they closed Stratton, was a huge thing. If you played, you could play volleyball, you could play basketball, you could be a cheerleader for your homeroom, and you had a tournament. You'd play two or three games in front of the whole school on an afternoon. You know, you'd have a ninth grade game, then eighth grade game, then seventh grade game, and then you would go on and, you know, you would have a tournament. And at the end of the tournament, you had the faculty play in the ninth grade volleyball girls, or the basketball players playing the ninth grade basketball guys. And, you know, it was crazy. And everybody loved it. And to this day, people will talk to me and they'll say, man, that's one of the things they talk about. You know, so much in school, people learn, doesn't really have to do with school. It has to do with just getting along with other kids, following directions, just growing up. And so after our first practice, three or four of the guys come up to me and they're like, we want you to be the coach because you know a lot about basketball. Well, I'd always kind of watched it when you could. I mean, in the late 60s, there's, you know, you watch it on Saturday and maybe Sunday on the NBA game of the week. And I literally had read books about it. And I thought, well, so I went to the library, got an old book out, you know, in seventh grade, drew up a few plays. We tried to run them. And, you know, we were successful because we had David Bailey on our team in the seventh grade. And he was bigger than everybody else. He was a good shot. We won a couple of games. We did that again. And I went to high school and I got in Coach Wiseman's class, Jomtry. And he had a lot of, it was a time, it was, I think it was a magazine called Athletic Journal. And in track season, it had, you know, it had a lot of track exercises. And football had all kinds of drills and plays. And in basketball, it had all kinds of that. Well, if I'd have taken a class on the coaching out of that magazine, I'd have got an A. as it was, I struggled to get through geometry enough. That's when I found out I wasn't going to be an engineer. But then I came back at Stratton, and Paul Venneri was the principal, and he's like, what can you coach? And I said, well, I played tennis at Concord, for Concord, for my junior and senior years after I transferred from Beckley College. I said, I probably coach tennis, whatever, basketball, whatever. I mean, I played it all. And he said, okay, you're a tennis coach. And the first year, I had a girl by the name of Warren. Lynn was her name. I got killed by a drunk driver about 10 years ago. And she was a phenomenal athlete. She played golf in the ninth grade. Her mom would bring her to the match. We would win everything. And, I mean, I like went undefeated the first year. And they had junior high teams like that. We went to, I think we played Park. We played Bluefield. I think we played Princeton. I mean, we played about four or five teams. And after that, I started coaching girls basketball. And I went through girls basketball for 4 years. And we won a county championship then. And then I coached ninth grade boys basketball for 13 years. And we won 8 championships and finished second 4 times. So I was in a championship 12 out of 13 years. And I helped coach Malvin Ross coach football. We coached track together. Stevie Kidd came in and he came on as my assistant. And then I just sort of concentrated on basketball and track and started going to a lot of clinics. And when I was in my late 20s and then came to Woodrow, there was some discussion on who was going to get the girls basketball job. And they hired me over a coach that ended up in Greenbrier County and coached there 10 years, went to 3 state tournaments, got in the second round one time. And then I ended up with prostate cancer. And so the last 2 years, I missed off and on half of my ninth year and then my 10th year I was still struggling with a lot of the effects of that stuff, and it just didn't go well. So, and it was my daughter's senior year, so I just resigned then and followed my daughter around when she was going to look at a lot of different colleges. Uh-huh. And during that time, we coached cross country. I forgot about that. And then I started tennis, and I've been coaching tennis since 2010. 14 years, and I've been a head coach probably about 6 or 8, somewhere through there.
You guys have had some pretty good teams here recently.
We have. Our boys, we went through a dry spell with Paulette Umberger, Paulette Lambert, and it wasn't anything. It just, there wasn't a whole lot of talent, and people didn't take it serious, and people were wanting to come out and learn to play and be on a tennis team at the same time, and that never ends well. the boys usually finish, I guess, in the last 4, 5, 6 years, no worse than 5th. And the girls are they finish as high as 4th or as low as 8th. But I guess the thing that I'm proud of the most is all our kids are 2-sport athletes. They're either playing soccer or they're playing volleyball, and then they come to spring, so they're in shape. So we can get to any ball, and so we really kind of concentrate on what to do after you get to the ball, you know. And then I have a couple guys that are ranked pretty high in the state right now, Rom Asimthambi and Ethan Shepard, and they are, I'm going to say they're probably top 10 in the state, singles, in 1s and 2s. Tennis is a little bit like wrestling. You have different classes.
Of all the things you've got going on with your virtual teaching, your tennis, your Boy Scouts, involvement now. You have entered the race for Raleigh County Magistrate Division
1.
And what caused you to decide to run for office?
Well, glad you asked it. Over Christmas, last Christmas, Val and I, my wife, we talked about it, and I just said, 45 years is enough. I'm just kind of tired of doing this. And I'd had some job offers from other people. Hey, if you ever want to do this, give me a call. And I said, I want to finish the year out, but I don't know if I'm going to go back to teaching next fall. I might, but right now I'm just tired of it. And I said, and she said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I thought something, So about 2 weeks later, one of my workers comes in and approaches me and says, have you ever thought about running as a candidate for magistrate, or have you ever thought about being involved in politics? And at that point, I hadn't. I mean, that was the farthest thing from my, I mean, for a while, it's almost, I mean, I think a lot of people were just turned off by everything that's so negative. You know, you can't, it's almost to the point in politics, you find the one you like the least, and that's who you vote for. I hope not. Or that's what I used to think. I don't think that now. And I said, magistrate? She said, yeah. She said, there's three openings. Two are going to retire. And because of the crime situation in Raleigh County, they're getting an extra magistrate. So there's three openings and there's three incumbents. Well, I mean, I knew well enough you don't run against the incumbent. I mean, that's almost, it's over before it starts. And I went home to Val and I said, you know, I was approached by actually a couple people, and they've asked me about this, and I think it might be something I could do. And I said, and it doesn't involve kids anymore, not until they're 18 or so. But and I'll be honest with you, I talked to my daughters, and we all discussed it. It was a family decision, and I said, I've got a couple more people, several people I also want to run it by. I said, because I've never run for office, I don't know what it entails. I've got a full plate right now. I said, and I know it's going to take a lot of time, you know, to do it right. And if you do it, I want to do it right. And I said, but I got a couple more people. Well, I ran it by you. I think that you thought it would be something to see. But in all seriousness, I mean, I value your opinion. And I took that in, and then I talked to a couple other people. And it just all, it's kind of like, what's different than what you're doing now? Basically, when you teach science, the first thing you teach them is something called a scientific method. And that's how to discern right from wrong. What is true in science and what is not true. What's right and what's wrong. You know, and you always learn something. And there's seven steps to it, and I'm not going to go over them. But you can actually guide your life through this. And, you know, I couldn't tell you the number of times kids have done something that they shouldn't have done. And they know it, you know, outside of class or in a coaching room, you know, on a field, whatever. And they know they did wrong, and they don't want to do it again, you know. And they know they're going to get, I hate to say punished, disciplined is, it sounds nicer. They realize that I had an ability to show them where they did the wrong thing, where they went wrong. You know, should you have done this or should you have done that? And then I'm giving them examples of in all my classes of people that thought, you know, the earth was flat or the sun was revolved around the earth. I mean, ancient theories at one time were popular, but had been proved wrong. And then you get to where I would have kids that would come to me. Hey, Mr. Bosick, I got this coming up. What should I do? How do I get into college? What job do you think I would be good for? You know, and then personal problems. And, you know, you, as a teacher, you know, you hear a lot of stuff that happens to kids that has nothing to do with school. And I'm sure they came to you and asked them. And a friend of mine said, well, you know, you spent your entire life trying to get people to learn right from wrong, what happens when you make bad decisions, you know, how not to make bad decisions. And so it kind of segued from taking high school kids and young adults to see what they're doing wrong in life and in school and in class, to now it's a courtroom instead of a classroom. I looked at it, and my family has agreed with me. Is like, you know, you have a chance now to do several things. One of them is make sure people that deserve to go to jail, you start the process of them going to jail. But you also have a chance for people that have messed up once. I mean, y'all have done that. I mean, yeah, I don't know, maybe daily. But you have a chance to maybe get them on a different path. You know, there's programs out there that people that have never gotten in trouble before can enter into to help to change their life. Crime in Southern West Virginia and in Raleigh County, for a lot of people, it's a way of life. They're going to do something. They know they're going to jail. They're going to get out. They're going to get tired. They're going to do something again. They're going to go back to jail. I don't know if you can help that crowd, but I know there are people you can help that aren't going, I'll never see again. If I'm magistrate, I firmly believe there will be people that I'll deal with them one time and I'll never see him again. Just as I believe there will people that I will see three or four times.
What are the qualifications to be a magistrate?
Well, in West Virginia, you do not have to have a background in law or law enforcement. You have to be 18. You have to have a high school diploma or a GED, and you can't be a felon. And so I squeak by. I've got a master's plus 45, you know, plus all those years experience. But the reasoning behind that is that they feel like that at the time they did that, the state of West Virginia felt like it was important to be judged by ordinary people.
A peer.
Yeah. Instead of somebody, you know, sitting on a bench that looks down on you and doesn't want to have anything to do with you. I think that that's the best way to go. Now, there are people running with law backgrounds, and I think that's good. I think you need a mix in the magisterial office of people with law enforcement backgrounds, and I think you need a mix of everyday people that have dealt with people all their life. I mean, that's all I've ever done was deal with kids, their problems, parents, their problems, coaches, their problems. You know, I feel like I've been successful in getting a lot of those problems straightened out. And I have, you know, to this day, I'll have people say, hey, you remember when I got in trouble for this? You know, and back in my day, it's like, you remember when you paddled me? I'm like, yeah. But I have had people say, you remember that? You know, I really appreciate that. Never got in trouble again. And they don't, you know, and they go on and you see them being successful in life. It makes you feel good.
The magistrate office, you don't have to be a Democrat or Republican. It's nonpartisan. But something happened right after you filed, something the first couple of weeks. Do you remember that?
Well, there have been several things, and they've all kind of... There are two things when you tell somebody you're running for magistrate. The day I talked to my last counselor or friend on a Tuesday night, and then I think the 21st or the 19th, 17th or something, on a Wednesday, I filed. As soon as I filed, I come home from lunch. I filed during lunch, so I come back to work, and I get a text. And it's from a parent that had their child, and she works around the courthouse, and she says, man, I heard you filed for a magistrate. Is that true? I went, yeah, it is. I mean, is that a mistake? And she says, no. She says, right now, that's the buzz around the courthouse. Everybody's excited. Everybody seems to think that you're going to do a good job. Everybody knows you got a good background. And then a little bit later, people start asking you, what you're going to do about this? What are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about that? Well, and there are people out there that I'm sure they're running for magistrate that are saying, well, I'm cleaning the streets off. You know, I'm throwing everybody in jail first chance I get. You can't do that. And are you a Democrat or Republican? I'm nonpartisan, which is, I can't. As a judge, you can't. I have people ask me about the Second Amendment. I have people ask me about transgender stuff. If it's not in the West Virginia Code, which is the book of laws for the state of West Virginia, I can't decide on it. And even in that book, in the West Virginia Code, it tells me what I can do. Do I misdemeanors? You don't put people in jail in a lot of instances. A misdemeanor for shoplifting, you don't necessarily put them in jail. You know, first offense. You know, but you set the fines, you set the bail, that kind of stuff. And they say, well, how are you going to respond to this? Well, I can't. I can't tell you because then you prejudice a case that ever comes before you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's not only magistrates. That's any judge. So, you know, yeah, I'm going to be tough on crime. Yeah, I'm going to do this. But I can't do anything more than the West Virginia Code will allow me because what happens is there's a group of lawyers on every Thursday that review what people have done in the past week, the magistrates have done. And they look and see, well, you know, Mr. Bostic set bail for $1 million because he caught Wayne Bennett 5 miles over the speed limit. Well, no, you can't, you know, that's not right. And so then in the past, people will draw attention to themselves by setting a really high bond for somebody, but 4 or 5 days later, it goes back down to what the average is.
What are some good things about running for office? I mean, you've been doing this now for a month or two, and so there's been some good things, I'm sure.
Well, I'll let you know. There have been. One, I've been in part of the counties that I haven't seen for probably 30 years. And it's neat because, I mean, I went back to them as a kid. Now, my dad taught at Clear Fork, and that was in 1963. And he taught 1 year there, but he taught at Beckley College. So I go through Route 3 down through Clear Fork. There's several stores there. And there's Gerald's and there's a Duncan's. And I'd stop in there and talk to people. Oh, yeah. Your dad teach at Beckley College? Yeah. Oh, I have him, And so the connection's already there. And it kind of makes me feel good about my dad. He's been gone about 4 years. And I went to one store. And they asked me, they said, did your dad teach at Clear Fork? Well, God, that's 60. That's 60 years ago. And I said, yeah, for 1 year. And I said, he even brought me to a game. And I remember, now the school's completely gone, but I remember going to the game. And I couldn't have been, well, 63, I was 7 years old, maybe. And he said, well, I remember my parents or my relatives talking about your dad. And I thought, wow. And then in other places, you just run into people that, what do you want to do? Why do you want to be a magistrate? Well, I think it's important that laws are followed and people that disobey laws get disciplined or punished. And I think that everybody that needs a day in court, it starts with a magistrate. The police arrest them. So they're the front lines and law enforcement. And then they bring them to a magistrate. They have a list of everything that this individual has done. And you go through and you look at the code. And the code says $500 fine and up to a year in jail, $250 fine and 6 months in jail. And then you go from that and you determine what the bond should be. You go, then you take them into a courtroom. And I've seen this in Charleston. We took the youth in government or youth leadership, a group of eighth graders, down to Charleston for 3 days, saw the legislatures. And one of the things we did, we went to night court in Charleston. And the lady, it was a female magistrate, she's up there and she says, this is what you've been accused of. This is the fine. This is probably what the bond's going to be. And then they say, do you want a lawyer? Do you want to represent yourself? Do you have a lawyer? Do you want one appointed? They answer that. And then you say, okay, what salary, what type of salary do you have? So they can set the bond. I mean, if it's, you want people to be able to bond out if, they're not a threat to society. In this case, she said what the bond was and said, do you know anybody that can post it? And well, if you can't post a bond, they don't release people on personal recognizance very much anymore. In some cases, you can, then they do go to jail. But usually you can find, the bond is 1% or 10% of whatever. If it's a $5,000 bond, then you got to come up with $500.
I think it's 2020 numbers here, but there were about 74,000 people in Raleigh County, and we've lost some population in the last few years. And there were around 53,000 registered voters at that time, and I'm sure that number has dropped some also. But usually, you only have about 40% of the people that actually vote of the registered voters. But this year, you have a presidential election. You have in the city, you have the mayor election and councilman. And from all the signs, and of course, you have three magistrate positions that are open that are brand new, besides, they don't have an incumbent involved. You have about 20 people running for magistrate. It's kind of confusing about the divisions. Can you help us a little bit with that?
That's the number one thing people ask because and of course, when you talk to some, oh yeah, I'll vote for you. Am I in your division? Well, yeah, if you live in Raleigh County. So the divisions came about. At one time there was Justice of the Peace. And I think before that there was constables. Now my grandfather was a constable for a coal company down on Whiting Gulf for years. And of course, that was back in the 30s, 20s and the 30s. So it was a rowdy time back in. And I don't have very many stories from it. He died a long time when my dad was 10 years old. And then they decided that the justice of the pieces was whatever wasn't working right. But it, when I go out in the county, the people tell me, yes, it did, because you had a justice of the peace for Shady. You had a justice of the peace for Clear Fork and for Mavs, you know, and it seemed to work pretty well. And they said, no, we're just going to call magistrates. At that time, there were only five of them. And we're going to say, whoever the top five vote getters get it. Well, the top five vote getters, as we've seen in any election, aren't always the most qualified. And so they went through a spell, apparently, where it was really bad. And then they come up with, we're going to have these divisions. Now, I look at a division like a seat. There are six openings in Raleigh County, six seats, six divisions. You can vote for one person in each division. Obviously, I would hope you would vote for me in Division 1, but there are other people that don't think like that. But you could go and vote for somebody in Division 2. You could go vote for somebody in Division 3, 4, 5, and 6. The second thing they asked me, well, if I vote for somebody else, is that going to cheapen my vote for you? Because I was always told, and by my dad, who piddled around with politics, he and Joe Cook back at Beckley College were into it in the 70s. He always said, like, if you're in a race among three people and you can vote for two of them, just vote for one. And that helps that person you're voting for.
Carries more weight.
It carries more weight.
Yeah.
And so after people find out that they can vote, you can live anywhere in Raleigh County and vote for any magistrate in Raleigh County. And you can vote for six magistrates. They just have to be in different divisions. And they'll ask me, well, can I vote? You know, if I vote for you in Division 1, can I vote for somebody else? Yeah, they're completely different. There's four of us in Division 1. In Division 3, there's like nine.
Wow.
You know, there's two schools of thought on this, and I'm not sure which one I was thinking, but if you're in a division with only two or three or four people, you know, you have to get more votes, but you're not running against as many people. The vote's not going to be split nine ways. It's only going to be split four ways. And if you can get 25, 30, 40% of the vote, then you should be in. If there are nine people running, the thought is you won't have to get as many votes, but there are more people to choose from. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean,
but now you pick the division when you enter the race. You just pick the division you want to run in. You don't. They don't have no geographic reason.
No.
You just say I want to be in Division 1.
Yeah, I could have been in division, any division, but I just thought one's the first one that comes to mind.
Number one.
There were other reasons, but I thought something else that comes into play is where are you in the ballot. Now, if I was in Division 3 and I was the last person and I was number 9 in that, and somebody is, nobody's going to run all the way down there unless they know you personally.
Yeah.
You know, now in Division 1, I'm the second guy on the ballot, which means as soon as you look at the ballot, you'll see me, as opposed to having to look down if I was third or fourth or ninth or whatever.
What's your general thoughts about the election process? I mean, do you like that idea or?
What little I knew about the electoral process came from my dad back in the 70s. And then you and I have talked some, and you have a little history of politics. And so that's all I thought of. But, you know, everybody will talk to you. All the other candidates, when you run into them, they'll talk. Everybody's friendly. Everybody's going to vote for you. Everybody you talk to is going to vote for you. It's kind of different. One of the things about teaching, I've always thought, and my dad was the same way, if you don't get the classroom on your side, it's going to be a long year. If you can't talk to them on their level or on any level, or if you can't be interested in them, that's why so many teachers don't make it. They don't take an interest in their kids. And you did. Your wife did. My wife does. I mean, the successful teachers do. And I feel like at transfer, I can talk to just about anybody. You know, obviously, the first thing somebody wants to ask me is something I can't talk about. How are you going to do this? I had a lady ask me, what happens if a man walks into the bathroom and my daughter's in there? Well, if it's against the law in the West Virginia Code, man, we're going to jump all over that guy. You know, and if it's my daughter, I'll probably go in front of a magistrate, you know. But I just kind of feel like that I bring a lot to the table. That, and I know people get tired of hearing about 45 years experience, but I've pretty much seen it all.
Yeah.
I mean, everything that has happened in high school happens in the world. And a lot of it is the same thing. A lot of it starts in high school and they end up going down the wrong path in later in life. And we both know of kids that have gotten shot and killed for things that they were doing or shouldn't have been doing. And I kind of feel like if there's a chance that I can keep that from happening and actually keep it separated, keep the people that don't want to get in trouble away from the people that are in trouble, then I think that's, how can that not but help Raleigh County?
Now, I know that when the broadcast comes out itself, you will have about a month left before the election on May the 14th. But there is early voting.
That's a key.
First of all, we want to recommend, please get registered to vote. There's at least 20,000 people out there in Raleigh County that are not registered. And if you don't, to me, that's an inalienable right. You need to get registered. You need to vote. So I think the deadline is April 23rd
for
that.
You can go online. There's a state site online that you can go to. If you go to my either one of my Facebook pages, my personal page, or my magistrate page, I have a link there for early voting. It's easy to do. It probably takes maybe 5 minutes. That's registration. I'm sorry, registration. Early voting's at the courthouse. It starts May 1st, and I think it finishes the 11th. I think it finishes the Saturday before the election, which is on the 14th. And I've worked elections for the last, I don't know, a dozen years or so, and we always voted early. And you just go to the courthouse. It's regular voting. You just don't go to the precinct or the school where you vote. You just go to the courthouse.
Yeah.
Knock it out. There's no lines. There's no traffic. If you don't vote, you don't have any reason to complain about anything. You might not like who got in, but at least you did your part not to get them in.
I agree. Well, Barney, you've made a positive impact on a lot of people over the years. And to be honest with you, I've never heard anybody say anything bad about Bernard Bostic. And that's a pretty good testimony right there. You've got a busy month ahead of you. And I wish you good luck. And we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, I love to coach and you know that, and it's just completely different in some ways from teaching. And so I was coaching tennis before I filed to run. And so I have to, it's not right. What kind of person would I be if I just dumped the kids off and abandoned them to do my thing? So I'm still coaching. And so we're traveling. We travel to Kanawha County. We travel to Ripley. We travel to Mercer, Greenbrier counties. And I'm not complaining. My old daughter just got a job in Morgantown. I'm tickled to death. But we've got to find her a car sometime during this. I've got to find her. We got to find her a place to live in Morgantown by May 1st. And we got to have her moved in not long after that. She starts working the Monday after the election. And so, you know, I'm juggling about four things in the air right now. Hopefully there's nothing else going to happen. But I'm gonna be honest with you. If I didn't feel like I was led to this, you know, as a Christian, you're always talking to people. Always talk about service, and this is just, I'm just going from one type of public service to another type. I mean, it's just something you're supposed to do, and I feel like led to do this. And so far, everything that I've needed to come to happen has happened. Some people believe in coincidences. I kind of do, but I think a lot of times there's more behind a coincidence than what people think. And if it happens, it happens. But right now, I've got the strength to keep doing all these things. I got a birthday coming up. I got a 50th high school reunion coming up in August. So, yeah, there's a lot of things on a plate, and it's getting heavier, but I've always had a big appetite, so I think I can take care of it.
Well, two of my favorite quotes, one of them is, to give anything less than your best is to sacrifice a gift, and the other one is whatever it takes. And again, good luck, and we'll be looking for some more signs out there. Bostic for magistrate.
Oh, well, that's a whole, that's interesting. Because everybody said don't put anything out before April 14th, just a month. Man, the end of March, people were putting signs out there, and that's driving me nuts. And so I'm on third order of signs. And most of them, some of them are in public, but a lot of them are out in the community. I give them to people. There's a great sign if you're on your way going into town from Stanford Road. I mean, it's lit up. It's probably it's the most professional one I've ever seen. But sometimes they turn up missing. I've also had some that have been blown over and blown across the road that I thought was missing. You know, so, and that's going to happen, but it's not cheap. It's more expensive than I thought it would be. But I've enjoyed it so far. I've met a lot of good people. It showed me a whole different side apart from education. And I think what I've taken away from it, there are still a lot of good people in government, in magisterial offices, in county offices, city offices, and there's a lot of good people that are running. So, you know, it's not as bad as what people make it out to be when it comes to, oh, you know, it's just terrible. They're all crooks. They're all liars. No, we're not all. Not all of us are. The majority of them everybody I've ran into is putting the county or the state or the city first.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty awesome.
I think the system works to a certain extent, and hopefully guys like you will improve it. And come back, see us. And anybody else out there that would like to be on our program, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com. And till next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. God bless you.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt.